Welcome to another Vox Talk recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. Sooner or later, the menopause will affect half the population, but it's rarely studied by economists. New research investigates the size of the penalty that women pay in the workplace when they go through the menopause, and makes a case for better policies to support women who suffer its more serious symptoms. In the last of our special episodes to celebrate International Women's Day, I spoke to Rita Ginger of the University of Bergen, who is one of the authors. Rita, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you for having me.
Rita, for many years, no one discussed the menopause. It was never mentioned socially. Does that also mean that it hasn't really been examined by economists?
Perhaps it's a reason. It was just something that society was not talking about for many years. But in the recent 4 or 5 years, there has been a surge in the news, in the internet. You see people talking about it, talking about the symptoms, how to get treatment. So it just became something very visible. There has been a lot of work on that, on the medical literature.
You know,
doctors have been concerned with which type of behaviors, socioeconomic characteristics of individuals, and also how genetics could influence the age of menopause. But there was not any type of evidence about what would be the economic costs of this major medical shock that affects all women that are living a sufficient number of years. And this is where, as economists and having access to the data sets that allowed us to actually do this study, that's where we come in.
One of the things about examining the impact of the menopause is that it's not a straightforward set of symptoms. What are the symptoms and how much do they vary?
Essentially, what menopause is the moment in women's life when they stop having periods for 12 months. And this is the technical definition of menopause. Along with it, it also comes the depletion of hormones such as estrogen and progesterone. The symptoms associated with these occurrences in women's lives are varied, and they can be night sweats, joint aches, hot flushes, trouble sleeping, fatigue, severe headaches, migraines, irritability, mood swings, anxiety, depression, panic, poor concentration. So it's a huge number of symptoms. And some women might not suffer any of these symptoms at all. And some women might suffer a combination of them and in a very severe way. So this is why it is a very complex event in a woman's life. So not only they stop having the period, they have physical changes, but on the top of physical changes, they have an array of symptoms that can come with it as well.
One of the things that we're learning is just how many women struggle to get treatment for these quite serious symptoms in many cases. But treatments are available, aren't they? What are they?
What is typically recommended in Sweden and in Norway, which are the countries that we study, and also in many other developed countries, it's to take hormone replacement therapy. And what hormone replacement therapy does, it's to replace the hormones that women are being depleted of. So this is estrogen or a combination of estrogen and progesterone. These treatments are available as pills, as gels, as patches. They are available in many forms. And the recommendations of the countries that we study typically follow the recommendations of the North American Menopause Society. It is to provide women as soon as possible with this treatment from the moment they start having symptoms to alleviate them, and also to provide the lowest possible dosages. A few years ago, there was a big randomized control trial, the Women's Health Initiative, that provided women in the treatment group of this experiment with this therapy, hormone replacement therapy. And because of some combinations of the sampling, this hormone replacement therapy was associated with an increase in the prevalence of cardiovascular problems and also breast cancer. So basically, the doctors cut down on the recommendation of prescribing this type of treatment. So in reality, it could be that the women that were on this trial were actually too old to be receiving this therapy, because the recommendation is also currently that women should not start receiving therapy if they are over the age of 60. So the timing when the treatment is available for these women is very important. And also some women should not receive this treatment at all. So for example, women with some forms of cancers. And some women should be taking a lot of cautions in taking it. For example, women with cardiovascular problems, which is something that typically comes up with age. So there's a number of considerations that should be taken to prescribe such a therapy. And this means that even in our days, especially doctors in the primary care are quite reluctant in making available this therapy to women. So typically, women need to be referred to gynecologists to have access to this type of treatment.
Now, your research looks into the economic impact of the menopause. Now, the menopause was often hidden in the past, partly because women of that age were not in the workplace. So has that change in work habits helped to make the menopause more visible? And I guess for your purposes, to make it more measurable?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's exactly one of the interesting features that we see when we look at data. What has been happening in the last 20 to 10 years is that we have seen an increase in the labor force participation for individuals over the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
But this increase in the labor force participation has been driven by women.
Right.
So we have more and more older women working. And with that comes the fact that they realize that they maybe are not keeping up with what has been happening in the labor market. So some women, after raising their children in the late 40s and 50s, when they get back to the labor market or when they start working with more intensity, they realize that probably something is happening in a faster pace as they would expect it, now that they don't have some other obligations at home. So this can actually make women seek care and seek care for things that they were not expecting and also to talk about these in the workplace.
Before you did this work, what did we actually know about the menopause? What gaps are you trying to fill here?
That's actually striking. So there has been a lot of work by doctors trying to understand the symptoms. What are the symptoms of menopause?
Yes.
Trying to understand what correlates with different ages of menopause. Because menopause, it's something that typically happens between the age of 45 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
The average age varies a bit. Across countries is around 50, 51, 52. And we know, the doctors have shown us that, for example, nutrition, smoking also is associated with a earlier menopause. But we know much less about the costs of menopause. There has been some attempts to correlate severity of symptoms of menopause with some costs in terms of sick leave, disability, income use. But there has been no causal evidence of how does these health shocks affect the labor market participation of women, the use of welfare benefits, the use of medical services, the use of drugs, and even social relations such as divorce.
Straight away, I guess we run into an empirical problem. As you said, the menopause does not happen to everyone at the same time. So how can you disentangle the impact of the menopause from the impact of aging in general?
So we are lucky to have access to extremely rich data sets from Norway and Sweden. These data sets complement each other because luckily, on the Norwegian data, we can observe all visits to primary and specialist health care for women. And also, we know the exact diagnosis associated to each visit. Unfortunately, for Norway, we don't have access to prescription data,
right,
where we could see exactly which prescriptions women have been taking. This is where the Swedish data helps us a lot because we can observe prescription data, prescription information in the Swedish data. So now what happens is each time a woman goes to the doctor, a symptom is registered. So we take advantage of variation in the timing when women have the first diagnosis of complaint of a menopause-related symptoms that we can observe in these data sets. And because we observe women well before these symptoms occur, we can control for the fact that different women have been in different trajectories throughout their lives.
Right.
So this richness of data sets allows us to exploit the fact that different women cannot predict exactly when they will have the first menopause diagnosis. So we can use women that have diagnosed later on in their life, which is kind of a random event because they cannot time precisely the diagnosis, as a control for women that have the diagnosis earlier on in their life. This is something that has been done to study the childhood penalty. we use more or less the same approach that has been used to study the child penalty, which is widely talked about by everyone in the society.
There is a lot of work on that, isn't there? Mm. Now, as we said earlier, sometimes women struggle to get a diagnosis or might not even go to the doctor, or it takes a few years to get a diagnosis. Does this give you a problem when you're trying to analyze the data?
Again, I think this is where we are super fortunate in doing this study in the context of Scandinavia.
Right.
And also the fact that we have access to primary care records in Norway, because typically there is no delay in the use of services. So maximum waiting time to get a primary care or GP consultation in Norway, it's going to be about 1 month. So this means that delaying the use of care to complain and to describe the symptoms, it's not going to be a problem in our setup. And what we see in the data is that women that have a diagnosis of menopause upon the quarter in the life cycle, when they have the diagnosis, we see an increase in the visits to GP, to primary care, right, and also to specialist care. This is not only because women are trying to understand, and the doctors are trying to understand what is going on, so they are receiving more tests, but also this is an effect that we see that is not sustained in time. So, you know, a couple of quarters after a diagnosis, the number of GP visits goes back to the level of prior to the diagnosis. One thing that is actually striking is that the number of medications women are taking upon a diagnosis increases, and the increase is sustained. So this really shows that there's something that is going on with their health that needs to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
So while we see a small effect on the number of visits to the services, the effects that we see on the take-up of medications are persistent, and they're especially driven by antidepressants.
So to your results, the big result, does the menopause reduce earnings?
It does.
Ah.
And on average, the reduction is of 4% in the 4 years after the diagnosis. It can actually reach about 10% 4 years after. So it's a decrease that it's sustained over time.
It's a persistent decrease,
yes. And associated to it, we also find that there is a reduction in hours worked. There is some dropout of the labor market, but although the effect that we see on earnings is a combination of a dropout and a reduction of hours, it seems that the reduction of hours is the main driver of the reduction in earnings. So women are stepping back. What happens in the data is that although all women go through menopause, not all women actually get a diagnosis of menopause.
Yes.
So what happens is our effects are driven by those women that actually get this diagnosis. And these essentially are women that seem to have more severe health problems. So we see that even before the diagnosis of menopause, these women were visiting the doctors more. So they seem to have a slightly different level of earnings, not very different from those women that never have a diagnosis prior to the diagnosis, but they do seem to be visiting the health services more. So this kind of suggests that maybe they have slightly different health capital. The trajectories across of their earnings and health, although are very similar for those women with and without a diagnosis. So that's also something important to say.
So if the menopause has a negative effect on many women's health, they're reducing their hours, their earnings are reduced, they are in their 50s. Is there evidence that the menopause is encouraging some women to give up work completely and retire, leave the labor force?
We have some suggestive evidence of that. We do see a small reduction in labor force participation. So we see that straight away some women are dropping out. But what is striking is that we see an increase in the use of disability income. And disability income typically is a waiting room for early retirement.
Right.
So
yes.
What happens is that the oldest women in our sample are 59 years old. So We cannot actually study directly effect on retirement, but there is some suggestive evidence that, yes, this is the case.
You mentioned the other work that was done on the child penalty. There is a lot of work on the effect on earnings for starting a family. How would you compare the levels that you have found from the effect on the menopause?
So typically, the child penalty is estimated to be around 26% of the pre-birth earnings.
Mm-hmm.
So our findings are slightly smaller, but they still tend to be about 10% at 4 years after the onset or the first diagnosis of menopause. So they are smaller, but they are still sizable.
So I wonder what we could do about this. I mean, the first thing I want to ask you is, are all women of different social classes and background, are they equally affected by this menopause penalty?
No, they are not. Ah. So that was striking for us. So there is no penalty for women with a college degree.
Really?
So that is something that for us was not surprised, because what we know from past literature is that more educated women are better at seeking health treatment and have better health-related behaviors. So that could be a possible explanation for why this set of women do not have a penalty. So it's really low-educated women that really are driving entirely the reduction in earnings that we see. What is also very interesting is that women that have a female GP upon a menopause diagnosis, they do visit healthcare service more than women that are matched with a male GP. But what is very striking is that we don't see any labor market effects for women with a female GP.
Does this also mean that perhaps some workplaces might be more menopause friendly than others, and they might be the workplaces that women who have more education would find themselves in?
It is possible. Highly educated women tend to work a lot on the public sector. Mm-hmm. They're teachers, they are nurses, they are doctors, they are professors of yep. economics. So it is possible. And also what happens is that we see that in the public sector, the penalty is smaller than in the private sector. Because of course, also in the public sector, there are still women that do not have a college degree. So we also see that there are some types of workplaces, some characteristics of the workplaces that are associated with larger penalties. For example, in larger workplaces, the penalty is smaller than in small workplaces. So workplaces with at most 15, 60 workers, they seem to be associated with a larger menopause penalty. Also, interestingly, workplaces with a higher share of female co-workers are associated with a larger penalty. But this could be because these women tend to select themselves into some very special type of occupations. Uh-huh. So they could simply have occupations that are more replaceable and easy to be substituted by a colleague.
Ah, right.
So this is something that we are investigating a bit more.
But now we know a little bit more about this. What can we do about it? What can policy do to support better women who are going through the menopause?
So I'm going to talk about what our results can say about what we can do.
Yeah.
And essentially what our results suggest is that information is key to understand how to seek treatment and how to just organize the work life.
Yeah.
This is something that we observe on a daily basis. And our findings really suggest that more educated women, that are those that tend to be more informed, are those that do not have a penalty. So information is key. You know, information about treatment, information about which symptoms you should expect, how to manage symptoms could be key. And obviously associated to that, then access to treatment, access to the GPs, which are the first line of services in terms of medical care, and in some cases, access to specialist care. So information combined with the possibility of access treatment are key. And finally, maybe in some cases, women need to take a couple of days off. But the nice thing about, again, doing this type of work in Norway and Sweden is that there is a quite generous use of sick leave in these countries already.
Now that we're discovering more about the impacts of menopause, let's hope that policy responds and does perhaps what we should have always been doing. Rita, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The paper is called The Menopause Penalty. The authors are Gabriella Conti, Rita Ginger, Petra Persson, and Barton Willich.
Next week on Vox Talks Economics. When your boss doesn't share your values, is that affecting your performance at work?